one man deserves in 100 lifetimes.
Then indulge me. Tell me your story again. Tell me how you and two of your comrades held off an entire arch-enemy attack and ensured that Amadis did not end up in their clutches. Tell me, so that I can record it accurately in the annals of my chapter and remember your glory for all eternity.
Regan glanced towards the back of the hall, in the vain hope that another surprise guest would make an entrance and spare him having to lie once more. There was to be no savior this time.
As you wish, Lord.
Another wave incoming. Man the walls, and don't shoot until you have a definite kill. Conserve your ammo. There's plenty more of these bastards out there.
At the colonel's command, Regan unslung his las rifle from his shoulder and joined the other members of his unit, perched atop the muddy trench that had been home for the past 2 months. He stared out into the soupy miasma clinging to no man's land, and waited until he could make out shapes in the mist. The man lying next to him in the redoubt, Tarik, bottom-dwelling trash who would kill you just as soon as look at you, squeezed off a shot, and a dozen weapons fired back in response. Now that the enemy had made their positions known, the men of the 1st Procell Irregulars easily picked off the front rank, and as successive phalanxes of the enemy stepped over the corpses of the fallen, more of them entered the kill zone and succumbed to relentless Imperial fire.
Tarik! A power pack spent! Pass me another!
The former gang loosed another shot out over the lip of the trench, then reached a tattooed hand into the breast pocket of his filthy tunic and tossed Regan a power pack. He smiled, revealing a set of false metal teeth, the intricate inkwork around his lips distorting to make it appear as if he had a rictus grin.
Don't let Telomian hear you. He thinks we should be able to repel these attacks with nothing more than our bare hands and a few choice curse words.
Regan caught the power pack, ejected the spent one from his rifle and replaced it. He resumed his position and, spying one of the attackers, took aim and pressed the firing stud. Nothing happened. Sharing an anxious look with Tarik, he released the new power pack and frantically started clearing out the mud that had conglomerated in the weapons clip housing. The enemy soldier was only meters away, and realizing that Regan would not have his weapon functioning in time, Tarik concentrated his fire on the advancing cultist. Incredibly, the onrushing attacker avoided all of the tattooed ganger's shots and launched himself over the top of the trench, landing right on top of Regan and throwing him against the hard earth of the back wall. Tarik swung around and aimed at the interloper, but the chaos-mutated freak raised a distended arm and knocked him from the top of the trench, his weapon spilling into the mud below. The cultist turned to face Regan, opening its maw in a grotesque parody of a smile. Its lips were ringed with rotting fangs, and maggots crawled over its tongue. Its eyes were like those of a fly, and the scrappy remains of its uniform did little to cover the bulbous layers of oozing fat that made up its torso. Raising both its club-like arms to the air, it prepared to land the killing blow on the still-prone Regan. He closed his eyes and awaited the inevitable. It never came. He opened his eyes to see the beaming face of Murtok, another irregular recruited from the midship's levels of Amadis, looking down at him, hand held out to help lift him from the muddy trench floor. Regan accepted it gratefully and rose to his feet. Tarik stood unaided and, using the butt of his rifle, rolled over the bloated cadaver to check that it was really dead.
Bastard's uglier than me.
Thanks, Mur. I owe you one.
Don't thank me. Just promise me that when this is over and we're all back in Amadis, you'll name your firstborn after me.
The three men laughed. The shared moment a rare break in the relentless horror of life in the trenches, before once again picking up their weapons and resuming the business of killing. The assault, though ferocious, was not as unrelenting as many of the previous attacks, and within an hour the waves of enemy combatants spewing forth from no man's land ceased, and the defenders could take stock and lick their wounds. The dead would be counted, their bodies burned. A shot rang out from further along the trench, and Regan and Tarik dropped the dead irregular they were carrying and reached for their weapons in anticipation of another attack. They soon relaxed again, once they realized it was merely one of their own snipers picking off wounded cultists and mutants who had fallen before they had reached the trench.
What took you so long? I thought you were going to fetch us some water. I can't shift the taste of mud from my mouth, and Tarik reckons his is so dry that Tarlan have requested to use it for combat exercises.
The podgy figure of Murtaugh ambled through the sludge towards the two seated men, shoulders slumped in defeat. Crouching down so that his head was no longer in line with the lip of the trench, he removed his helmet to reveal his shock of curly auburn hair.
There's none left.
What do you mean there's none left? We're stationed in a muddy gash in the earth where water pisses out of the very walls we're trying to defend.
He twisted a finger into the dirt wall of the trench and pulled it out. To prove his point, a trickle of water seeped down towards the ground, leaving a narrow channel in the trench wall in its wake.
Orders are not to drink it. Something to do with that emperor-forsaken mist that's clinging to the ground. It contaminates everything it touches. Some of the lads billeted further around the trench caught a small canid in no man's land and ate it. When they were found the next morning in their bunkhouse, it looked as if they'd been pulled inside out. That's what I heard anyway.
So what are we supposed to do in the meantime? We'll all be dead of dehydration by the time the next attack wave comes.
Murtaugh simply shrugged. Regan removed his water bottle from his belt and shook it, but it didn't make a sound. Tarik did likewise with the same result. They both looked at Murtaugh, who fumbled his own bottle from his belt and imitated his comrades. Nothing.
What about him?
Tarik pointed a tattooed finger at the corpse they'd just unceremoniously dumped in the sludge. Murtaugh and Regan shared an anxious look.
Come on, Tar. You know the orders are that corpses are to be recovered with their kit so it can be redistributed. Tolomin will have you up on a charge if he finds out.
Ignoring his friend's protest, Tarik leant down to the corpse and, after removing a half-full water bottle from the dead man's belt, began rifling through his pockets.
What's this, then?
His stubby fingers emerged from the inside of the cadaver's tunic, grasping a small silver flask. He unscrewed the cap and put the container to his nose.
It's not Amasek, my friends, but it looks like...
He plunged his hand inside the dead man's tunic again, and it re-emerged, holding a set of dog tags.
Trooper Meslin here was in possession of prohibited materials, to wit, and I quote the guardsman's primer here, liquids of an intoxicating or stupefying nature likely to impair or inhibit a guardsman's ability to fight, if imbibed.
The tattooed former ganger screwed the cap back onto the flask and slipped it away in the folds of his own tunic.
Way I see it, I'm doing old Meslin here a favour. Wouldn't want that kind of stain on his service record. I mean, what would his grieving family think if they found out that he were both dead and a drunkard? I don't think I could have that on my conscience, quite frankly. So...
The three guardsmen turned in alarm.
Not only can you not follow a direct order from me not to shoot until you have a confirmed kill, but it appears you can't follow a simple standing order to recover casualties with full kit!
They'd been so distracted by Tarik's corpse looting that they'd failed to hear Colonel Tolomian and his fox trooper, Linkmel, approaching. Whereas Linkmel and the three other irregulars were caked in filth from head to toe, the colonel appeared as if he had just slipped into a fresh uniform, the only giveaway that he'd strode the half-kilometre from his command bunker, the couple of centimetres of wet brown stain that caked the bottom of his grey field coat. Despite his fresh attire, the colonel's bearded face looked as tired and battle-weary as any of the rank-and-file troops in the trench. His wide, bloodshot eyes lent him a crazed bearing that was beginning to make itself evident in his voice as well.
Or, alternatively, by making that first shot, I drew the enemy into revealing their positions. We used to pull stuff like that all the time in ship's bottom. There was this one time...
Tolomian had run out of patience with the insubordinate ganger and looked ready to strike him with the gloved fist balled at his side when the Vox unit on Link Mel's back sounded.
Forward 19, this is Amadis Prime. Do you copy? Over.
Link Mel reached an arm around to pick up the Vox receiver on his back, but Delomian spun the trooper roughly around and picked up the handset himself.
This is Forward 19. Go ahead, Amadis. Over.
Reinforce and resupply denied. We're on our asses up here and can't spare food or water, let alone able bodies. You're on your own, Forward 19. Good luck and good hunting.
Telomian was just about to protest when the line to Amadis' command went dead. In frustration, he threw the handset away along the trench, causing Linkmel to slide through the mire to retrieve it. Nostrils flaring, he turned his attention back to the three men. Fearing the full brunt of the colonel's wrath, and noticing his hand straying towards the bolt pistol holstered at his waist, Regan, Tarik, and Murtok began to edge away slowly. Then, abruptly, the colonel's demeanor cooled, and sanity embraced him again.
I could have you all up on charges for your conduct, but in light of current circumstances, I believe that would be counterproductive. However, as you saw fit to deprive your fellow soldiers of food and water...
In fairness, sir, it was only water. We didn't actually find any...
As you saw fit to deprive your fellow soldiers of food and water, it is only fitting that you should make amends by finding them food and water.
The colonel's piercing stare withered Murtok where he stood.
And how do you propose we do that, sir? Walk up to the enemy trenches and ask them if they'd mind lending us a barrel of fresh water and a couple of hammocks?
Another piercing stare. Another guardsman withered.
Not a bad idea, Trooper Antigone. Let's call that the backup plan. What I'm actually ordering you to do is march back to Amadis and see what you can lay your hands on. Tarik here must still have some contacts among the criminal fraternity. And failing that, there's a finely stocked zoological garden on the upper levels that I'm sure will provide several days' supply of fresh meat.
The three olive-clad troopers looked around at each other in amazement. Regan motioned with his eyebrows at Tarik, encouraging him to speak. When the ganger didn't bite, Regan stepped up.
With the greatest of respect, sir, that's the most ridiculous thing we've ever been ordered to do. Even if the three of us could get to Amadis and back with enough food and water to make it worthwhile, I'm not prepared to deprive the people we're trying to defend. We might as well poison the water supply ourselves and spare them the slow death of dehydration or starvation.
The other two irregulars looked on apprehensively, anticipating the colonel's hand finding its way back to the butt of his pistol.
Thank you for being honest and forthright with me, Trooper.
Murtok and Tarik visibly relaxed, grateful that neither them nor Regan would be the victim of battlefield justice.
In that case, we'll be going with the backup plan.
Why did you have to go and open your big mouth? If he'd sent us back to Amadis, all we had to do was go AWOL for a few hours and then come back empty-handed.
Even at a whisper, the rebreather he was wearing ensured Murtok's voice carried across the barren, muddy expanse of no man's land. His two comrades, advancing in front of him, cut him glances that told him to shut up in no uncertain terms. Regan had considered the possibility of pulling a fast one before he'd answered back to the colonel, but, given Telomian's current frame of mind, returning from Amadis without food or water would be tantamount to signing their own death warrants. Far better to take their chances on patrol in no man's land, or, as the colonel had put it,
reconnoiter the enemy positions and determine the strength and troop types arrayed against us.
Or, to put it in yet clearer terms, a suicide mission. Time and distance had lost all meaning in the flat, brown terrain, and the three irregulars had no idea how long it had been since they'd left the relative safety of the trench. Though they were fairly certain they were still continuing in a straight line, the cloying mist made it impossible to tell just how close they were getting to the enemy trenches. Regan stopped suddenly, held up his hand and motioned his comrades to halt. The enemy had not mined the contested zone, but other obstacles awaited anyone foolhardy enough to venture there. And it was the rotting corpse of an enemy combatant that had drawn Regan's attention. Satisfied that the monstrosity was dead, but not daring to touch the corpse in case it had been booby-trapped, he signaled for them to continue advancing. Tarik broke formation and got closer to Regan. He lifted his rebreather slightly to keep his voice at the barest minimum.
Way I see it, we should just sit tight here and then head back to the trench in a couple of hours. We'll just tell the colonel that there's lots of the enemy and they're all big ones too. What's he going to do? Stroll out here himself to double-check?
Regan pulled his own rebreather to one side to reply.
Too risky. The enemy have probably got patrols out here too. And if we encounter one, I'd rather we were on our feet and ready to react.
Tarik nodded and resumed his position in their formation without any protest. Though the three men were all of the same rank and inexperienced soldiers, Regan had emerged as their de facto leader during their time in the trenches. Murtagh and Tarik had grown to trust him implicitly, and it had kept them both alive so far. If they were going to survive a pointless patrol in no man's land, then following Regan was the best way to achieve it. Hours passed with nothing more than the occasional corpse or discarded weapon to break the monotonous terrain, when, just as they were beginning to doubt the existence of an enemy trench, the mist began to thin out, and the landscape took on a different aspect. Carefully stepping over a length of razor wire, Regan signaled for them to hit the ground. For the next few minutes, progress was painfully slow, as they practically swam through the mud. With every meter they advanced, the mist became thinner, and Regan was convinced that it was the enemy themselves who were controlling the weather. What other explanation was there for the poisonous fog hanging only over Amadis and the trenches dug to defend it? The silence also gave way the nearer they encroached on the enemy position, and the three men grew more concerned about being spotted than being heard. Ordering them to stop, Regan pulled out a set of field magnoculars. While the Imperial trenches were crowded, those of the arch-enemy looked more like a cattle container. Such was the volume of bodies crammed into such a tight space. Regan now realized why they were able to send so many attack waves against the defenders' positions. Sheer weight of numbers meant they were content to gradually whittle down the Imperial forces, until taking Amadis became a formality. Cultists and mutants unloaded crates from armored vehicles and lowered them down to waiting arms. Occasionally, a bigger, better armored soldier would shout orders, and several of the subordinates would scurry off and unload a freshly arrived vehicle or lug ammo containers further along the trench. To Regan, it looked like they were preparing for an advance, one bigger than the Imperial forces had experienced thus far. When Regan turned the magnoculars on the once green plains that lay beyond the vast brown gash that had been gouged from the earth, what he saw made him realize that when the enemy's next advance came, it would be for the final time.
Artillery pieces?
Yes, sir. About 2 dozen. Some of them look primitive. Catapults, ballistae, that sort of thing. But a lot of it was modern stuff.
And they were still in the process of moving them into position?
The big guns, yes.
The command bunker of Forward 19, normally a hive of activity, grew quiet, and the eyes of every adjutant and guardsman in the cramped earthen shelter were on the conversation going on between the colonel and the three bedraggled men who had just hauled themselves back across no man's land. So far, the war had been one of attrition, but the introduction of artillery on the side of the archenemy rendered the Imperial forces impotent. No longer would the Chaos forces need to rely on manpower alone, and no matter how many guardsmen manned the thousands of kilometers of trench, there wasn't much they could do against artillery shells flying overhead and reducing Amadis to scrap.
And how long do you estimate before those guns will be operational, Trooper?
A couple of hours, tops.
Of course, the low-tech stuff is already up and running. If they wanted
a
to...
A thief and an expert tactician now, Trooper. I'm well aware of the capabilities of their archaic weaponry. But quite frankly, I'm more concerned about those siege engines that are about to start pounding the city. Linkmel, get me a line to Amadis Command.
Linkmel removed the Vox unit from his back and, setting it upon a table strewn with battle maps and order sheets, began manipulating the dials in an attempt to get a clear signal.
He's got that look in his eye again. What do you think he's going to do?
What can he do?
Do we have coordinates?
The city's surrounded by the enemy, so an evacuation or retreat is out of the question.
No, sir.
Amadis' command won't have time to press gang any more bodies to reinforce. And besides, what good would it do if they did? A bigger audience for the pyrotechnics display?
You've been spending too much time around Tarek. You just sound as callous as he does.
Their tattooed comrade bristled at this and narrowed his eyes at the chubby guardsman. Murtok's usual shock of auburn hair was camouflaged under a layer of rapidly drying mud, and, like the other two men, he was covered in wounds picked up on their rapid dash back across the kilometers of mire. Patches of crimson blood were all that broke the monotony of brown their uniforms had become.
Have a line, sir. It's a weak one, though. I'm not sure how long I'll be able to maintain it.
The colonel grabbed the handset from the Vox trooper, and through static cracks and pops, he was able to deliver his warning. No response came, and after several tense moments of link meld twiddling dials, a faint reply carried across the airwaves.
Maintain your position. Enforcement on way. Hold line. Repeat the line.
Please repeat, Amadis command. What kind of reinforcements? How long before they get here?
Parties. Hold.
The garbled signal cut off abruptly, and this time Linkmel couldn't reinstate it. After several tense minutes, he abandoned trying to raise Amadis' command and shook his head in the colonel's direction. The lithe officer simply ran a hand through his beard and stared off into the distance at nothing in particular, deep in contemplation. Then, his reverie suddenly broken as if struck between the eyes by an invisible pellet, he addressed the anticipative soldiers in the bunker.
It seems obvious to me, men, that there is only one course of action open to us now. We are going over the top.
I don't like this, Tar. It's been hours. Surely we should have had some kind of signal by now.
They haven't stepped out to the Commercia district to pick up pastries in a hot canteen of Recaf. They're storming an enemy position, for throne's sake. I'm pretty sure we'll know if they've taken it, but I'm even more certain that if they haven't, the enemy will let us know soon enough.
Several dozen men stood on the wall of the trench, gazing out across no man's land, desperately hoping to see a flare or signal fire informing them of victory. As yet, the only lights in the sky had been the occasional flash of lightning. An unnatural storm had swept in shortly after Colonel Tolomian had led the bulk of the irregulars in the direction of the enemy trenches. The sky glowed purple and green in short, percussive bursts before the blanket of darkness descended again and a peal of thunder rang out. Shivering under their standard-issue ponchos, the skeleton force of wounded soldiers took little comfort that the penetrating downpour had finally washed away the mist that had clung to no man's land since the chaos invasion began.
Do you see anything?
Tarek had to yell to be heard over the din of rain and thunder. Regan, standing in an elevated redoubt 10 meters further along than the ganger, was peering out across the mired expanse through his magnoculars.
Nothing yet!
The sky flashed again with an aberrant purple light, and for the briefest instant, Regan thought he could see something. He pointed the magnoculars skyward, desperately trying to track the shape in the pitch-black night. As if sensing his frustration, the sky lit up again for the scantest time, and Regan had the horrifying revelation as to what was heading towards the Imperial trenches.
Down! Down! Incoming!
Regan managed to throw himself to the floor of the trench just in time, as did most of the other irregulars. One man wasn't so lucky, and unable to move at any great speed due to an injured leg, took the full force of Colonel Tolomian's lifeless corpse, fired by catapult from the enemy's position. Body parts and viscera cascaded down on the trench, and ponchos already wet with rainwater became slick with blood. More corpses followed the colonel's, though still able to press themselves against the front wall as body after body, both Imperial guardsmen and enemy troops, landed in the trench.
Is the signal clear enough for you?
Tarek sneered at Murtok, who was clinging to the wall of the trench like it was his wet nurse. With every impact, human shrapnel skittled along the dugout, until the floor resembled that of an abattoir. Such was the volume of blood and body parts. Regan let out a scream as a section of tibia speared him in the back of the calf, and he turned to the man next to him for aid. Puzzled when he didn't receive a response, he spun the man around, only to realize that the other part of the tibia had embedded itself in the unfortunate irregular's chest, killing him instantly. For what seemed like an eternity, the unholy deluge of corpses rained down on the last few surviving irregulars huddled together in their trench. Some of the men were weeping and wailing, this latest horror too much to bear on top of the many they'd already endured. Then, just when it seemed there would be no end to it, the barrage slowed before coming to a halt altogether as the Chaos forces ran out of their grisly ammo. Many still shaking and crying, the guardsmen extracted themselves from the shelter of the trench walls and looked around dumbfounded. Whichever way they looked, men they once called friends and comrades lay in ruin. One final act of desecration inflicted upon them by an enemy that was both relentless and ruthless in equal measure. One of the survivors began babbling incoherently and attempted to scramble up the back wall of the trench in the vain hope of fleeing back towards Amadis. Battling through the pain in his leg, Regan grabbed the back of the man's poncho and hauled him from the side of the trench, unceremoniously depositing him in the charnel pit below, where he curled up into a ball and sobbed gently.
What the hell did you do that for? He's got the right idea. There's nothing we can do here except become sport for the kind of monster that can do this.
Taric held both arms out and gestured all around him.
We all swore solemn oaths when we took the Emperor's coin that we would defend the Imperium even in death. If those reinforcements are on the way, then we owe it to them and to the people cowering in that city behind us to fulfill that oath.
You're as mad as Telomian. There aren't any reinforcements coming. Just like there wasn't any food, water, or ammo. You can stay here and end up as a plaything for the enemy, but I'm getting out.
The ganger made to pick up his last rifle. When, as suddenly as it began, the torrential rain stopped falling.
That didn't sound like thunder to me!
Silence. Then the pause gave birth. The handful of men in the trench were thrown to the ground by the impact of the first artillery blast and struggled to regain their footing as their position was bombarded by further shelling. Regan grabbed the hood of Taric's poncho and lifted him back onto his feet.
Still want to try and make it back to Amadis?
Well, take my chances here, thanks.
Good. You can help me take some of these bastards down, then.
Taric turned to see where Regan was pointing. He soon wished he hadn't, when he saw the horde of cultists and mutants that were using the cover of the artillery barrage to make their way across no man's land.
Keep firing! Those of you too wounded to fight, act as loaders for those who aren't! Don't let the enemy breach the trenches!
With no officers to lead them, the irregulars had turned to Regan for leadership, and in spite of his youth, he had rallied the men and formed some semblance of an organized defense. He'd spread the lines thinner than Telomian had on previous attacks, and because there were Laz rifles to spare, each shooter had two rifles, one to fire while the other was being reloaded by an injured comrade. Though not ideal, the constant stream of Laz fire was keeping the predominantly close combat armed enemy at bay.
What's the ammo situation like, Mur?
The podgy guardsman had taken a shrapnel wound to the shoulder during the artillery barrage and had been acting as Regan's loader ever since. He held up a single power pack and shook his head.
Last one.
Regan depressed the firing stud on his rifle and drew a blank. He tossed it back to Murtok and took the proffered replacement.
Keep that one for yourself.
Murtok looked puzzled.
Why?
Because even without a power pack, Imperial Guard Laz rifles make pretty handy clubs, and I have a feeling we'll be needing those soon. If you do have to fire it, make sure you keep enough juice back for one final shot.
Murtok was just about to repeat his previous question when understanding crept up on him.
Oh.
Along the length of the trench, the irregulars' weapons ran dry. And as the enemy breached the Imperial lines, the battle became up close and personal. Fastening on his bayonet attachment, Regan stabbed out at the first two cultists to make it to his position. The first took the full length of the steel blade in his thigh, while the second attacker found himself impaled upon it and hurled backwards. Murtok put a las round through the head of the first cultist, before making to do the same with the second, only to stop himself from wasting the shot when he realized that Regan had finished the job first time around. He knelt down to pilfer the knife sheathed in the Chaos Worshipper's belt. Only after moving aside what he thought to be a cloak, did he realize the cultist was clad in a second skin, one stitched together from the flayed corpses of his enemies.
Holy Throne!
Man up, Mur! I need you with me for this. Come on, let's make sure that they don't do that to the people of Amadis.
The hand-to-hand fighting was intense. Although the Chaos forces possessed strength in numbers, the close confines of the Imperial Trench made it difficult to press that advantage. Just as the months of trench warfare had been about softening up and reducing the numbers of the Imperial Guard, the endgame followed a similar pattern. For every cultist or mutant that fell, another appeared to take his place while the Irregulars' numbers slowly dwindled. Murtok and Regan fought back to back, swinging with bayonet and rifle butt, trying to keep a clear zone around them. The stench of the enemy was almost as dangerous as their weapons, and there were times when both men found themselves fighting one-handed, the other used to cover their mouths and noses to prevent being overcome. Two maggot-infested cultists they'd been battling against collapsed backwards, the backs of their skulls disintegrating from a pair of shots to the head.
Looked like you needed a hand.
The erstwhile ganger was virtually unrecognizable from the Taric they'd last seen only minutes earlier. A vicious wound had opened up his cheek, and the flesh hung loose, exposing his teeth and part of his upper jaw. His face was streaked with thick blood from a pumping head wound, and the remains of an enemy blade jutted from his right thigh.
Ready to make good on that oath we swore?
We all gotta go sometime. Might as well go out fighting.
The three men formed a circle as a ceaseless tide of enemy troops swarmed the trench. With a combination of las fire, blade, and improvised club, they made their last stand. Cultist after cultist fell until, exhaustion and blood loss finally taking its toll, Taric lost consciousness. Regan and Murtok put themselves between the enemy and the body of their friend and fought like the Emperor himself was at their back to prevent him from being further mutilated. Murtok fell next. A hulking mutant launched itself over the lip of the trench, knocking over the two guardsmen and half a dozen of his co-fighters. Regan quickly scrambled back to his feet and shot the mutant clean through the side of the head, but the brute fell forwards onto the insensible Murtok, trapping him beneath its bulk. Distracted, several pairs of hands tried to pull Regan to the ground. His damaged leg finally gave way, and he splashed back into the mud and viscera carpet of the trench floor. He lay there stunned for a second, before he felt cold blades sliding under his flesh as the cultists started to flense his skin as part of their gruesome ritual. He threw back his head to scream, but no sound came. As awareness began to drain from him, he swore he saw the vapor trail of a flyer in the night sky and heard the sound of a weapon being discharged nearby. He put it down to the pain and the loss of blood playing tricks on him. He opened his mouth to scream again, but the noise he heard sounded like more weapons fire. Where had the cultists gone? They had just been there, stealing his flesh to make themselves a new skin. He closed his eyes, but, knowing that he'd never wake up if he fell unconscious, fought them open again. That's when he saw the angel. There, head silhouetted against the brightest of Procell V's six moons, was the most beautiful thing Regan Antigone had ever seen. An angel in the Emperor's own image, with wings of metal and clad in green power armor. It wore no helm save the halo of moonlight, and the tools of its vengeance lay sheathed about its waist. It gently lifted the guardsman from the filth of the trench floor and cradled him in its arms.
I am Sergeant Tigraine of the Dark Angels, and I am your salvation.
Regan couldn't be sure if the angel had spoken to him or was communicating directly into his mind. But the last thing he remembered before finally letting sleep take him, was ascending to the heavens on the angel's metal wings.
And the rest of the story you know as well as I.
The previously somber and ceremonious atmosphere had relaxed over the time it had taken Regan to recount his story. Old majors and colonels sat around swapping war stories over glasses of expensive liquor, and some of the younger backroom staff had pushed the tables away from the middle of the stateroom to create an impromptu dance floor. Tigraine was pensive, his massive armored hands placed together steeple-like in front of his mouth, eyes narrowed. He was just about to speak when an elderly colonel with a bushy, handlebar mustache blundered over to their table, obviously drunk.
I beg pardon, my lord, but you've been hogging our guest of honour all night. And there's some officers from Procell 7 who are desperate to meet the liberator of Amadis.
The old man was either too drunk, too full of himself, or a potentially damaging combination of both, to care about how he was addressing one of the Emperor's finest. Tigraine's expression did not falter, but where his elbows met the table, wood began to splinter and crack, as if the Space Marine were tensing in readiness to strike. Regan was frozen to the spot. The septuagenarian colonel just stood there, swaying precariously, entirely oblivious to the gravity of the moment. Tigraine relaxed, and an obviously forced smile crossed his lips.
How indelicate of me. Please, go and talk to those fine young military minds and see if you can't impart but a little of your wisdom upon them.
His tone was different to earlier, as if there was more that he'd wanted to say and hear. Regan turned to accompany the colonel when the company master spoke again.
Besides, Colonel Antigone and I can talk more later.
The next few hours were spent recounting his tale to rising stars of the Procell system's military machine, but with each telling, details changed as, panicked by the Dark Angel's demeanor, Regan struggled to keep track of the lies. Nervously, he kept glancing around the room to monitor Tigraine's movements, but the massive, armored figure just sat impassively at the front of the room, taking neither food nor drink. Having just fended off a challenge to some of the details of his account from a young major barely old enough to shave, let alone lead men to their deaths, Regan spotted that Tigraine was no longer seated at the head of the hall. A quick scan of the room told him that the Space Marine must have taken his leave of the celebrations, and, feigning a minor ailment, Regan decided to do likewise. He was halfway across the hall when, as if from nowhere, the enormous figure of the Dark Angel emerged to block his path.
But, I thought, how?
I was trained by Sergeant Naman himself in the art of camouflage. You think that because of our size, we can't hide ourselves in a room full of people? Now, do you think I'm stupid, Colonel Antigone?
I... of course not, Lord. Why do you...
Then why do you insist on lying to me?
Please, Lord, I don't know.
There are aspects to your story that have bothered me ever since I first heard it. You were all raw recruits, boy soldiers, practically. With nobody to lead you, why didn't you flee back to the city or head for the bunkers as soon as the artillery barrage started? How did you know the correct way to defend the trench? None of you were officers or had any schooling in tactics.
Please, I swore an oath.
And how, Colonel Antigone? How in the name of the Lion did most of the enemy dead have wounds from bolt and plasma weapons, when all your regiment was equipped with were lasguns and knives?
Regan slumped to his knees, a house built out of a quarter century of lies crashing down around him.
On your feet!
With the aid of his cane, Regan pulled himself slowly upright again. He looked up at the angel, holding back the tears that were welling at the corners of his eyes.
The truth of it! Now!
Very well.
The handful of irregulars in the trench were thrown to the ground by the impact of the blast and struggled to regain their footing as their position was bombarded by further shelling. Regan grabbed the hood of Tarek's poncho and lifted him back onto his feet.
Still want to try and make it back to Amethyst?
Too right.
I'm coming with you then.
Irregulars scaled the walls to escape the barrage and spare their lives. Shouting and screaming, panic spread through their ranks like an airborne virus. Some clawed at each other, pulling comrades down from the mud-slicked sides of the trench in an attempt to be the first to escape the artillery exploding around them.
Then came the miracle.
The sky glowed a brilliant orange for an instant, forcing Regan to shield his eyes. When he looked up again, the lone figure of a hooded space marine stood on the lip of the trench. When he spoke, the fleeing guardsmen froze, mesmerized by the imposing newcomer's voice.
You swore an oath to your emperor that you would give your lives to defend this city. Now is the time that you make good on that oath, or I will be the instrument of his vengeance upon you.
More unnatural lightning flashed in the sky, and Regan could see that the silhouetted figure carried a pistol in each hand. His robes fluttered freely in the breeze, and beneath the notably dry fabric, a scabbard hung from his belt.
None of you shall flee this field of battle. Pick up your arms and make ready for the enemy assault.
Unquestioningly, each and every irregular removed himself from the wall and retrieved his las rifle. The space marine jumped down from the edge of the trench and began organizing the guardsmen.
Spread the line thin. Each of you fit enough to fight, take two las rifles. Those of you who are wounded act as loaders for the others. Make every shot count.
He moved along the trench, indicating to the guardsmen where to position themselves. When he reached Regan, he pointed to a redoubt in the trench wall, and after looking Murtok up and down, took his weapon from him and handed it to Regan.
Remember, every shot counts.
His initial awe and fear at being in the presence of a space marine waning, Regan dared to speak.
My lord, where are the rest of your chapter?
The hooded figure paused, as if unsure of the question, or possibly the answer.
There is only me. We cannot rely upon my legion arriving in time to save this city. It is up to you and these men here to defend it. Are you fit for the task?
It wasn't just the words, but his voice too that rallied Regan's spirits. At that moment, he would have followed the mysterious space marine into the eye of Terra itself, if he'd ordered him to.
I am, Lord.
Then don't stop fighting until the Angel of Death comes to claim you. Keep fighting! Those of you too wounded to fight, act as loaders for those who aren't. Don't let the enemy breach the trenches.
The volley of fire from the Imperial trench was unrelenting, and wave upon wave of cultists and mutants fell against the onslaught. The strategy the hooded space marine had employed to defend the trench was working to perfection, with no enemy combatants making it within 10 meters of the irregular's position. Regan passed his empty las rifle back to Murtok and gratefully accepted the replacement offered to him. As he did so, he caught sight of the daunting, green-armored figure in action. Moving far faster than an unaugmented human, the space marine easily loosed off 6 or 7 shots to the guardsmen's one, each a kill shot. His bolt pistol ran empty, and in the time it took Regan to inhale, then exhale, the old clip had been ejected and a new one fitted, ready to spit death at the enemy. Regan recommenced firing, and felt a little foolish for asking where the stranger's battle brothers were. Who needed an entire chapter when a lone space marine was so effective?
We're running out of power packs! Ready yourself for close combat!
Within seconds of each other, the Irregulars' weapons ceased firing. Without the wall of Lasfire, the exclusion zone in front of the trench filled with thousands of Chaos foot soldiers intent on slaughter. As they launched themselves over the top, they were met by an array of bayonets. The trench effectively turned into a giant pit trap as they became impaled upon them. More of them came, but met with the same response. Those few that did manage to avoid the blades, finding their lives ended by the butt of a rifle used like a club or a shot from the Space Marine's plasma pistol. Despite having the sword slung at his side, the hooded figure never seemed tempted to draw it, even when it would have been a more efficient method of ending a cultist's life. The frenzied melee went on. Whenever a cultist fell, another took its place. Whenever an irregular fell, a gap opened in the Imperial defenses, forcing those trying to prevent the Chaos Tide from washing over Amadis even further onto the back foot. A gangrenous mutant bounded down along the trench, unnatural limbs flailing this way and that, knocking both friend and foe aside. The vile beast made it as far as the section of the trench the Space Marine was defending, before a gauntleted fist made violent contact with the side of its head, rendering it to pulp. The headless corpse swayed there momentarily, before crashing to the ground. In the time it had taken the mutant to realize it was dead, the robed stranger had already turned away and killed three more of its brethren. It was all in vain, though. Unable to stem the flow of enemy troops, the Irregulars soon found themselves succumbing under sheer weight of numbers. The more bodies that crammed into the trench, the harder it became to swing weapons in the enclosed space. The air was filled with the screams of dying guardsmen as the cultists hauled them to the floor and flayed them alive. Wigan, Murtok, and Tarik found themselves fighting back to back, managing somehow to prevent the cultists and mutants from overwhelming them. Nearby, the green-armored Hulk was fighting his way through the mass of diseased and warp-altered bodies as if attempting to reach the three stricken guardsmen. Then, without warning, he simply stopped and raised his head to the sky as if he had caught a scent on the wind. He turned to face the last three surviving Irregulars, casually crushing the skull of a cultist in one of his immense fists.
My battle here is over. Now make your oath to me that you will not speak of what happened here as long as you live.
Please, we're dying here! Help us!
Tarik slumped to the floor of the trench, the loss of blood from his multiple wounds finally becoming too much for him to bear.
Your oath! Now, or I will kill you where you stand and save the enemy the trouble.
Murtok fell, the bloated form of a mutant leapt over the top of the trench and cast him to the ground. Regan was able to loose off a shot to kill the beast, but the unconscious form of his friend remained trapped underneath it.
Please!
Your oath! Also help me, if you survive this, I will hunt you down and perform such atrocities upon you that you will beg me to have let you die here.
He threw out an elbow and nearly decapitated a cultist who had the temerity to try and sneak up behind him.
You have my oath. I shall not utter a word of this to another soul. Now please help us.
Satisfied, the robed Space Marine ran off in the opposite direction, both pistols glowing hot as he cut a path through the mass of enemy soldiers, converging on the abandoned guardsmen.
Cypher.
The word hung there for a beat.
Curse me for a fool. He was there within our grasp and got away again because you made an oath to him.
The entire stateroom had fallen silent. All eyes were on the giant in the center of the room and the small, crippled figure before him.
My lord, I owed him my life.
You owed him nothing. Nothing, you hear me?
His right hand reached down to the holster at his belt, and impossibly quickly, he drew his bolt pistol and held it to Regan Antigone's forehead.
No, please, no. I'm already dying. You know that. I've already suffered so much because of this damn war. I lost both my boys, my beautiful boys. In the time I have remaining, I just want to be left in peace and go and visit the gravesites. Please, grant me that, as one old soldier to another.
Tigraine towered over him, unflinching, finger poised on the trigger. Without taking his eyes from Regan, he addressed the room.
This man is no hero of the Imperium. This man is a traitor who consorted with the enemy during the liberation of Amadis and lied about his role during the defense. His name is to be struck from the records, and all memorials and dedications to his false heroism are to be destroyed by order of the Dark Angels chapter of the Adeptus Astartes.
The onlookers shook their heads and a murmur spread around the room.
Kneel!
I...
Kneel!
Regan dropped his cane and let gravity do the work of bringing him to his knees. He looked up at the Angel of Death.
You don't have to do this. Only you and I know.
Tigraine remained inexpressive.
All this over a secret.
The Space Marine's emotionless features were replaced by a sneer. He bent his knee slightly so that he could reach down with the bolt pistol and place it against the smaller man's temple.
Regan Antigone, you have been found wanting in the eyes of the Emperor and of his loyal servants. You have willingly fraternized with and granted aid and shelter to enemies of the Imperium. You have dishonored the memory of those who sacrificed themselves so heroically and brought shame upon your regiment. Regan Antigone, you have been found wanting, and for that your life is forfeit.
In his last few seconds of life, Regan Antigone closed his eyes and prayed that when the angel came to take him to the heavens this time, his sons and the friends he'd lost in the trenches would be there to welcome him.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.